I have no financial relationships to disclose. I wish I did, but I don't. We're a low-budget operation. Let me tell you a little bit about Raising Women's Voices. It's a project of three organizations: the Avery Institute for Social Change, which was founded by Billy Avery, the wonderful founder also of the National Black Women's Health Project; the National Women's Health Network, which is based in Washington; and my own Merger Watch project, which I founded in 1997 to address the hospital mergers that were occurring, in which one of the hospitals was Catholic and the other was non-religious, and the resulting merger wiped out the women's reproductive health services, to which the Catholic doctrine objects. Our goal is to ensure that women's health needs across the lifespan are identified, articulated, and addressed in health reform. So when Raising Women's Voices was founded in 2007 by those three organizations I mentioned, we had some real challenges ahead of us. First of all, many women's health advocates, not Ellen Schaefer, but many other women's health advocates, had not been part of the health reform movement over the last decade. You all know about how the reproductive health movement and health have been sort of bifurcated and proceeding on kind of parallel paths without a lot of interchange. So as a result, many of the reproductive health advocates were really unfamiliar with some of the key issues and concepts of health reform and unsure what we would get out of health reform. And moreover, the health reform advocates were kind of worried about us. They didn't know us. They were worried all we wanted to talk about was abortion and we would mess up their health reform plans. And so it was a really tricky situation starting out. So here's what our approach has been. First of all, listen to women. Start at the grassroots and ask women what they wanted from health reform. Second, educate ourselves about health reform terminology and concepts so that we could talk knowledgeably with our colleagues from the progressive health reform coalitions. Third, mobilize women to get involved in broad-based health reform coalitions in the states and become trusted partners whose views could be respected. And lastly, strategically influence the development of health reform policies so that the needs of women and our families would be addressed. So let me talk a little bit about each of those strategies that we used. Listen. Listen was really important. And I know many of you are community health planners, like to think about how can we design health systems that work for people, and you know that listening is really important. So we started out by holding small group discussions with diverse communities of women, teenagers, young mothers, older women, women of color, immigrants, victims of domestic violence, and we heard from them what were the problems that their families were facing and what would fix it for them in an ideal health reform bill. Out of those sessions, we came up with a women's vision for quality, affordable health care for all that then grounded all of our analysis and all our activities going forward from then. And we heard from these women that, yes, reproductive health was a priority, but they also had some other important concerns, like ending pre-existing condition denials, making coverage affordable, making coverage available through all of life transitions. This is really important for women. We, more than men, have trouble maintaining coverage through all these transitions, going from school to work, handling it in divorce. About one quarter of women have health insurance that is dependent coverage through their partners and thus can lose it upon divorce or upon widowhood. Also job loss. And these women also told us that even if they had health insurance, it was so darn confusing they couldn't figure out how to use it. And so they wanted a better system for that. So we listened to that, and then we decided to go out and start educating women about what's at stake for women in health reform. We held a great conference in Boston, which Ngina was very active in. And we spotlighted women's health issues, trained 260 women from 28 states, and sent them back to their states knowing more about what health reform is and what was at stake for women. We also work to help women grasp the concepts of health reform. Many reproductive health advocates did not know what health savings accounts were, or single payer, or what a mandate was. These were terms that were just unfamiliar. We had webinars, calls, presentations at conferences like this one. And right now, our education effort is focusing on implementation of health reform to try to get women up to speed. We did a lot of mobilizing. We recruited coordinators in 22 different states. We actually have one in Colorado now. It's the Colorado Organization of Latinas Working for Reproductive Justice. We have some probably in many of your states. We formed partnerships with a number of progressive health reform groups on the national level to find out what they were thinking, to participate in their decision making. We provided fact sheets and talking points to women's health advocates, and we tried to motivate them by sending out a biweekly e-newsletter and have a really active blog on our website. We also mobilized women to speak out. Many of those women that we had initially talked to in those small group discussions told us just incredible stories about the problems that they and their families had been facing. And so we got them to tell some of those stories at public forums. And they talked about getting breast cancer and then losing their insurance, about having family members being denied coverage because of pre-existing conditions. It's just the range of issues was incredible. We did the first one in New York City. It was moderated by Nancy Snyderman, the television medical commentator. And then we did a number of them in places across the nation, as you can see on this slide. And these were very, very effective. We also got women from Raising Women's Voices coordinators to hit the streets for health reform. This was a demonstration of about 1,000 people that we helped organize in New York City. Right after, remember those August town hall meetings when all the Tea Party people and all that were just causing ruckus and calling Barack Obama Hitler and all that stuff? We came out and organized some really great demonstrations. We did teach-ins, a lot of them at colleges, but also in community-based organizations to answer community questions. You know, they were hearing all these crazy things about health reform from the Tea Party people. And they got confused, not surprisingly. So we would walk them through those things and try to explain it. And then for our reproductive health advocates, the proposed STUPAC ban on abortion coverage was a big concern. We brought our regional coordinators to Capitol Hill. Here's a couple of them. That happens to be Loretta Ross from the Sister Song Coalition in Atlanta. We brought them there and trained them on what to say to their coordinator, to their members of Congress, and then they kept up with them all through the debate. So after the bill was passed, what did we do? Well, we went right back to the grassroots because that's where we feel we were accountable to those women that we spoke to in the beginning. We feel we need to have their monitoring advice on this. You know, how's it going? So we've been holding community sessions that tell women what they and their families got from health reform. This was from the one held in Miami by our coordinator, which is the Latina organizing group in Miami. They were able to talk about the good news, like young adults can stay on their family health insurance plans and there'd be no copays for preventive services, but also the bad news that undocumented immigrants got left out and there are restrictions on abortion. So what are we doing now in implementation? We're working on two levels. First, the federal level. We've been commenting on those regulations that have been flying out of Kathleen Sebelius's office at HHS with two main goals. We're urging that contraception be added to the list of preventive services that must be covered with no coinsurance. It's terrible that it wasn't included at the beginning, but we can get it added now. And then we've been opposing the abortion ban and the pre-existing condition insurance plans. Many of you may not know that those special plans that just started over the summer that were supposed to help people that have been denied coverage because of pre-existing conditions do not cover abortion. And it was, unfortunately, our president who made that decision. That was not required in the health reform law. HHS imposed this ban, and what it means is that women with all kinds of serious medical conditions who might need an abortion, even for unfortunate circumstances and a wanted pregnancy, have no coverage for that. We are running a whole campaign about that using women's stories. You get the theme here, women's stories, right? Raising women's voices, using women's stories to guide the policy. We gathered some very powerful stories of women who actually needed abortion coverage to protect their health because of serious conditions. We took those stories and created a video using actors who portrayed the women. And we've had viewers sending emails to HHS and the White House urging them to lift this ban. If you want to see it, it's on www.tellwashingtonnow.com. I put a few flyers in the back that will guide you to it. We're influencing state implementation, training our coordinators on what's at stake for women, and coaching them how to get involved in the implementation. As some of you may know, there are advisory councils and work groups set up in a number of states that are working on this. And we want to encourage you to get involved with Raising Women's Voices. If you visit our website or send an email there, you can sign up and get regular updates on what's happening for women's health. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Lois. So I have a caveat that I forgot to say in the beginning. We had invited a speaker that was going to speak about her experience, her organization's experience with forming coalitions across African-American women, Latino women, Asian women, and Native American women, and at the last minute she couldn't come. But I think what you've heard here today that I found very interesting was this idea of for me, they were pretty new. I'm an old person, but they were pretty new, and they included electronic organizing and the word netroots to add to our grassroots idea. I think we heard a lot about educating the membership and, of course, learning from the membership, that one of the ways that our speakers talked about learning what they were going to organize with in terms of healthcare reform was to start with what their members were interested in and what was important to their members, and then staying in touch regularly, either electronically or in a multiple media, like Lois talked about, to keep the membership informed. Excuse me. And then lastly, the forming of coalitions and consortia. So that you did not have to be all things to all people, but it's a way to also build, as we know as community organizers, to build our constituency through forming coalitions with different groups, and at the same time they learn that they have something in common with people who are have disabilities or who are low income or who are urban or who are rural or whatever. And that way we can build our coalition, our movement toward the kind of healthcare reform that we want to see.